Welcome to another edition of the FA's Women and Girls Coach Development Podcast. It's my pleasure to have with me today Tom Hartley. Tom Hartley is a UK coach developer. He's also first team coach at Oxford United women's team, and he's currently working with me and other coach developers on his UEFA A license. Tom, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on, and we spend a lot of time talking and chatting, but it's great to finally to get you on the podcast.
It's a pleasure, Mark. Thank you for having me. Really looking forward to this.
Good. So, Tom, we're going to talk about a subject that we're both very passionate about, and that's coaching the female player. But looking at it from the perspective, from a psychological perspective, because some of the stuff that you sent me and we're going to talk about today is really interesting. I think it's something that we can share with coaches that will hopefully fuel their brains to go away and find a little bit more and challenge the way that actually they design practices and think about how they work with young players to bring the psychological side of the game into the forefront of their approach. Do you want to give a little bit of background, first of all, of how you sort of come across this and how we've got to this point?
Absolutely, of course. So, as you say, Mark, I'm a learner on the UEFA A at the moment. And I think just to caveat anything that we'll talk about in the podcast, I consider myself very much a learner. I've been coaching for 15, 20 years and probably have done a lot of stuff out in practice because it's either felt right or because it was something that was delivered on a course and got me thinking and I had a go at trying that in my own environment. So I probably have as many questions as I do answers, probably more questions than answers around this topic, because I kind of, when I reflect on it, I feel that my understanding is very much surface level, but actually knowing a bit more and utilizing some of the information on the UEFA A license has helped validate some of the stuff that perhaps I've done in the past and shone a spotlight on things I'd like to find out more about and things I'd like to try out with the with the players and the young people with my care. So this conversation and this topic, if you like, came about through one of the A license workshops. The lead tutor showed a slide just showing a brain really with the male brain development and female brain development and highlighting the differences between them. And it made me really think about, well, in practice and when I'm out working with players, what are the differences around how the brain is developed? And therefore, what are the implications for the way I plan and the way I deliver practice? Because actually, maybe there's some things that perhaps I've fallen into as a coach doing because it's felt right. But this really gave me a foundation to be really quite intentional and quite deliberate around how I might plan some group work and individual interventions.
Yeah, and obviously the picture that you shared, I've seen before. And probably the first thing that comes out, that stands out to me really, is that when you compare a boy's brain to a girl's brain, one of the things that really stands out is that by the age of 11, a female brain is already half developed, whereas actually, compare that to the boys, it takes to the age of 15, generally, for a boy's brain to be half developed. And that got me thinking a little bit, and we both worked at times in the foundation phase, and it made me think again about how we actually challenge that foundation phase psychologically within our practice.
I completely agree. Maybe as coaches and being out there to try and help the person in front of us develop, we get drawn into considering the X's and the O's. And what does it look like in terms of our practice and the technical things that we're going to deliver? And if you think about the four corner model, I think perhaps coaches get drawn to the technical physical things first, where actually it's always felt really important to consider the psychological and the social factors which contribute towards development. And when we're working with foundation players in particular, because that, let's face it, any player who makes it through to the professional game has started there. They've started at grassroots. They've started being a child. How much rope do we give them? How much accountability and ownership do we give in a practice that enables those players to make lots of decisions for themselves? the opportunity to perhaps go and make lots of mistakes, and then how we as coaches can help them move forwards from that, rather than the coach holding all the knowledge and all the information and perhaps all the power in a coaching session. How much of that is a two-way relationship between the player and the coach and the environment and the type of task that you set up?
So what you're really saying there is that what we want coaches to think about, and something that obviously is at the forefront of your brain, is how we support players in the learning process and not just the doing, and how sort of practices, whilst we have a purpose from a tech and tack, at a very young age, if we can start to get them to think about why they're doing what they're doing and how it links into future sessions or prior sessions, could have a massive impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can't expect players, especially young players, to turn up to a practice and then be in a position where they can just download all your knowledge and information and then they can go and do stuff immediately. Learning's really messy, as we both know. So as coaches, we perhaps need to think about what stage and what age players are at within their development. So what do they need right now? I think there's a big case to say, try and meet the players in front of you where they're at. And even though we know that a female brain is going to be half developed by the time they're 11, I think it's understanding that within your group, there's lots of individuals who are probably at slightly different points. Mm. And then it's about trying to design activities and tasks which the players can have a real hand in how they turn out. They can make decisions that have an impact on the success or the failure of an activity. Things go right, things go wrong, and young people having the opportunity to reflect on it, to work with their peers, to help each other out, to talk to the coach. I wouldn't necessarily say there's a silver bullet for helping players develop, especially considering in the psychological corner all the different things which are important to helping them get better. But as coaches, having an awareness that this is really, really important, and there are lots of things that you can do within your practice to help stretch and support individuals is massive.
So would you say then that, just thinking this from a sort of a theory point of view, we've doing a lot of work currently around transformational coaching and getting players to really engage in the learning process. And part of the learning process is sort of to be able to reflect. Would you say then for young players and coaches that are working with young players, that if we're going to engage them in the learning process, then we also maybe need to teach them how to reflect about what they're doing in training and games?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we're working with young children, it's about understanding them as not just players in your practice. There's so many other things which are going on in their lives. So let's face it, all of the children we're coaching in the foundation phase are going to school. And in a school environment, they probably are challenged with and supported to understand reflection and working with others and that collaboration on a regular basis. So why should it look any different in football? And maybe sometimes as coaches, we try and cram in as much football as possible, and the football dictates what a practice looks like. But if we were to look at it from a slightly different angle and say, well, let's design a practice in a way that puts learning at the top of the list. So what activities do I need to do? How do I need to structure the different parts of my practice to really promote learning? So it might, as coaches, we're familiar with whole part whole as a practice design. We're familiar with kind of creating some scenarios for learners, or having practices which have got lots of interference or no interference. And maybe it's worth saying, well, what can I do today as a coach? What activity can I design that's going to have the most impact on the players and help this experience, this learning experience, to be really sticky, rather than just expecting by dripping in lots of technical information and lots of complicated practices. If we think about the learning first, then actually we could have a long-term impact on the person in front of us.
Can you sort of bring that to life with an example? Is there anything that really sort of resonates with you? putting you on the spot a bit there, Tom. Sorry.
No, that's fine. One thing for me that I love to kind of gravitate towards when I'm coaching, and this could be with a foundation phase group, it could be with an adult team, is that kind of scenario based learning. So let's set the scene. We've got 10 minutes left to play in our practice. We're losing 2-0 to a team who are top of the league, and we need to win the game to take the league title from them. What are we going to do? So actually, the team who are 2-0 up, they've got some outcomes there about A, technically, they're going to have to play in a certain way to get some success. But they're also going to have to think about how do we protect our lead. And the team who are behind, they've got some decisions to make around, well, we've got to score 2 goals. What's the risk versus the reward? When do we send players forwards? Who's the best player to send forward? How do we communicate as a team? What's our strategy? And then going back to your previous question, Mark, about helping players reflect, is giving them the opportunity to try this stuff out time and time again. So a lot's to be said about the environment that you create at practice. So if your group can have the opportunity to play out this scenario 2 or 3 times, but in between they can chat, they can reflect, they can work out what's gone well, what could be better, then you're working together with the player in the learning process.
Yeah, no, I think it put a smile on my face, because I can think of 2 or 3 sessions where exactly the scenario you've just spoken about I've done, and the power of that idea and working with that, there's generally potentially between the first set and the second game there's a degree of frustration, but players and the young girls will start to talk about what they could do, but sometimes it can be quite broad and sort of high level and not much detail to it. But as you play out and you get to the second break and you've maybe had slightly more success in the second game, all of a sudden the players start to really drill down into the depth of what they could do and how they can change things, and they start to then talk about what the opposition are doing, and they're really engrossed in that learning process rather than just the doing of playing a game and trying to score a goal or trying to stop the opposition, linked to the scenario that you bought. And I think it brings us back to the point that actually for young girls, that ability to hold information and to sort of link information together again is something, linking it to the brain development and memory, is that at those younger ages they are much better at doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was something that you mentioned earlier, Mark, about understanding the why. And I think perhaps when you're working with female players, helping them understand the reasons that you're asking them to do something in your practice really contributes towards their motivation and their application as well. So at the moment, I'm working with a senior adult team, and actually we want them to play a high press within the way we go and play in games. As we all know, a high press is physically exhausting. It's really difficult to maintain for long periods of time. So actually the key motivator in helping the players understand our reasons to do it is telling them why. Well, actually, why do you think it's going to be important to press a team high up the pitch? What are the returns for us if we can do it really effectively as a group? And actually, if we can work with the players and get them to buy into the reasons behind it, they can understand the why. Their motivation goes up, and actually we're not always going to be completely effective in a high press, but actually we've got the team pointing in the same direction. So there's some real clarity amongst the group on why it's important for us to do it. And I think from working with female players for a while, helping them understand the reason behind the outcome for the practice is really important. Because then they're invested in the learning. They understand the direction we're going in. And whichever group you work with, there might be a different route to get to that end point, to get to the outcome we've intended. But if players can have some agency in the process and make some decisions for themselves and think about how their performance or behaviours impact on those around them, then you could create some really exciting stuff.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it ties in nicely. I had the pleasure yesterday of speaking with Esme Morgan on her journey as a young girl who started in boys, shall we say, mixed football, and is now obviously currently on camp with the England Lionesses. And next week we'll play in an FA Cup final for Manchester City against Everton. And one of the things that she spoke about was exactly what you just said there. One of the biggest things that she wanted from any coach that she worked with from the age, and she talked from about the age of under 10 up to even now, it was explaining the why are we doing? And it wasn't to challenge the coach, but it's to have a deeper understanding. And I think that's one of the biggest differences that we can talk about is between boys and girls is, you know, boys are a little bit more instinctive, a little bit more will go with the flow and do things and be creative in the moment, whereas young girls through practice and games want to understand more about how they do things and why they do it and what impact it's going to have on the team. So again, when we take it back to how we coach, whatever age it is with young girls, we've got to be thinking is what is the why? Why are we doing this practice? And how am I going to get that information across to them in a way that's clear and concise, but also doesn't pose too many questions? Because I think, Tom, that my next question is, that's one of the risks, isn't it, with the why with female players, that sometimes in practice they can overthink things?
Yeah, 100%. And look, going back to that slide and that picture of the brain we spoke about at the start, on there it highlights that women, females have a larger hippocampus. So the hippocampus is that part of the brain which stores memories and transfers new information into longer term memory. And I think there's a balance here for coaches to strike in terms of how much information is appropriate at this moment in time, because actually you could go down the road if you took this on literally. You think, right, I'm working with female players, I can just drop a grenade of information and expect them to absorb it all, and it just doesn't work like that. And I think it's about knowing the person in front of you. So if we know that perhaps when you're working with girls and women, they perhaps have the ability to remember more things that is going to help them develop, that's good to know. But actually everybody's a little bit different, so it's balancing out, well, actually, if we give too much information at the wrong time in the wrong place, that's not necessarily going to be helpful. In many respects it could be a real hindrance to their game, because all of a sudden they've got four or five new things in their head while they're trying to play, and that could become confusing. And I've seen it sometimes when coaching that you might step in, and I've been guilty of this myself, in for the want of helping the player, you give them four or five pieces of information that you want them to go and get better at immediately. And then you almost see this fog kind of appear around them, and the speed of which they're playing slows down. Because I guess if you think about the brain as a computer, they're trying to process lots of information all at the same time. And as a result, they're having to really think about it, and their short-term performance decreases. So Pete Sturges, who I know you know, Mark, and been a real role model in terms of the development of coaching and working with young players, coined the phrase about making the right intervention with the right person at the right time. And maybe sometimes making no intervention is an intervention in itself. So it makes me reflect on, well, what kind of information do I want to give players? What's the most important thing that I could help them with at this moment in time? And when's the time to do it? So to bring this to life, I was coaching last night, and one of the players on the far side of the pitch had made this brilliant penetrating pass between the centre back and the fullback. And I wanted to say well done and reinforce that what she tried was great. And I was shouting, Kaylee, a bit like Alan Partridge when he's calling Dan in that episode, and he's just not looking back. And I thought, she can't hear me. There's just this. She's just, you know that phrase, like being in the zone. She was completely in the moment. And it was absolutely the wrong time to try and speak to her, because she was involved in something, and me calling that was the distractor. It was probably the worst thing I could have possibly done. And it was with the best intention, but it didn't have the impact I wanted it to. So afterwards I went and spoke to her, just kind of said, well done, love that pass. And she knew exactly the pass I was talking about. So I think as coaches, it's trying to balance out what information, when, and how to deliver it. Because if you don't quite get it right the message you're looking to send across might get lost somewhere.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's a great example, because again, what we want to encourage from our coaches is a two-way communication, and sometimes that positive motivation in game, in practice, can be a distraction, and it's again the right time, the right place to bring that kind of positive motivation. And actually the impact of going to speak to her afterwards and almost starting a dialogue about why the pass was so good and what it meant to her and how it felt will probably trigger more sort of thought process in her head and build a degree of encouragement for her to do it again. And again, it comes back to that individualizing our coaching at times. And again, it's something that we both know that players value that worth, that individual sort of connection at times can really build future enthusiasm to try and do things again. Whereas actually, like you say, just shouting well done in a practice probably doesn't always have that impact of that one-to-one connection.
I'd agree. I think the power of praise is huge. Mm. And it's one of those tools in your coach's toolbox that perhaps if you use it too much, it loses its value to an extent. So it's finding the right time to give the right kind of praise and support to a player to help them recognise that what they've just done was great. And one thing I think is really important for coaches to really think about is, what are you giving praise for? And I'm sure there's lots of research that backs this up. And I was talking to another coach recently who kind of really validated this for me, is praising the intention over the outcome. Because football is such a complex sport and because the pitches are always different, you're not always going to get success. But actually, if we go about praising the intention of the player, so they may have tried to play a great pass between two defenders, but in that moment in time, it just wasn't quite the right option. It wasn't quite executed right. The intention is there. And if we keep building on that intention and reinforcing that was the right thing to try at that moment in time, then actually we have an opportunity to not just encourage the player to feel really safe in that learning environment, but we can build some self-belief as well.
Yeah.
And I think if we can help players with that, that's huge in terms of long-term player development. You hear coaches sometimes telling players to be more confident or concentrate more or be more brave. And I was watching a foundation phase kind of friendly game the other week, and the coach on the side was maybe calling some of these things to the players on the side, and the coach had the best intentions. They just wanted to help the player remain focused or encourage them to try as hard as they could. But when you ask a player to concentrate more, that doesn't really mean much to a 7-year-old. So actually it's about finding the bits where they are concentrating, and rather than trying to catch someone out, try and catch someone in. Let's build on the praise, but build the intention of, well, that was, I love the fact that you were so focused at that moment because it meant you were able to get to the ball a second quicker than if you weren't concentrating. And then maybe that mark links back to the why. Rather than just saying concentrate more, as a coach, you're pointing out why it's really important to concentrate in that moment, but maybe highlighting it doesn't all, if you concentrate, you don't always get the result you're looking for, but it's definitely the right thing to try.
Yeah, you're right. And as you say, the sort of the example that you brought to life in terms of praising the intention is a very valuable one, and linking it to the words that you just said about being brave and being confident and everything is actually, when you say those words to any age of player, what does it actually mean in that moment? Because being confident could mean two or three things in two or three different moments within the game. And I think it sort of, for me, it comes back to that point within your practices that, like you say, just getting them to recognize when they do something really well, but not, as you say, it might not be actually because they scored the goal, but it's how they got to the point to score the goal that is the really valuable part of the learning. Because ultimately, we all know that football, as you say, no two scenarios are very, very rarely the same. So every opportunity we get to paint pictures and to get them to remember that the picture that they've just created is one that bred success, that there's more chance that they'll repeat that motion again, and rather than just praising what a great goal, and actually don't really know why it was a great goal.
I agree. I mean, just another example, if you don't mind, just to bring that to life. I think perhaps coaches sometimes feel this pressure that they need to have the answers to all the questions that the players might ask. And they need to be able to go and correct things when things go wrong on a regular basis. But actually, it's not, I think, a great learning environment isn't the one the coach owns that they let the players into. And it's definitely not an environment that the players own, that the coach is included in. It's something where players and coach can meet in the middle somewhere. It's something where they can co-create. So a player at training the other night asked me a question about going and pressing the centre-back when they were in possession of the ball, or dropping off and trying to delay. And she said, well, when should I do it? Because I noticed when in the game, if I did it here, it worked, and if I didn't did it here, it didn't. And I'll be completely honest with you, Mark. Like I said at the start, I'm developing, I'm learning. I had no idea what the answer to the question was. So I asked her what she thought. And I said, Emily, what do you think? What worked for you in the practice? And she said, well, if I went here at this point, X, Y, and Z happened. But if I did this, so that's really interesting. It's a great observation. Do you think that when we play our opposition on Sunday, those triggers you've just told me about would be similar? He's like, yeah, I guess I would. And I felt that she probably had a lot of answers inside herself already. So as a coach, and especially coaching female players, and again, linking back to these things we've talked about already, that kind of opportunity, the affordance that maybe female players can kind of keep, remember stuff more, I guess is a simple way of putting it. And perhaps have the opportunity to join the dots between the different pictures they see. As a coach, sometimes your role doesn't have to be the person who's got all the knowledge and is able to give it to the players. It's about asking the right question at the right time, so the players are able to make really good decisions for the pictures they see in front of them.
Yeah, and I think it links nicely back into just showing a real interest in the individual, and I think as much as any information that's drawn out of players, just that interaction with individuals can really improve their self-esteem, their in, as you said before, their confidence in moments to go and try these things, because they've had reassurance from the coach. Not as we say sometimes, you know, the barking orders, you must do this, you don't allow your opposition to do this, can have a negative effect on how young females and players act in those moments, because all of a sudden the negativity and the words that come out almost puts a degree of fear in actually trying what maybe you've worked on, and therefore the outcomes aren't successful. So I think it's really important to sort of add to this that the relationship building and that trust and that respect between coaches and players as being a two-way process is really, really important when we talk about these sort of things.
I think maybe as coaches, we sometimes get drawn towards the X's and the O's, the tactics, the technical stuff first and foremost. And I can understand why. We've got a passion for the game and we want to help people improve at the game. But actually getting to know the people in front of us as people before players is really important. There was a coach, again, who I was speaking to the other day, who shared a model with me that I really liked. And I'll hold it up to the screen so you can see it. Excuse my rough drawing. But it's thinking about what do the players need at this moment in time. So it's a balance between care and challenge and stretch and support.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, sometimes if we've just lost a game or we've just had a moment in training that's been really difficult, do we need to keep challenging and stretching people? Or actually, for the next part of the practice or next week, maybe we need to spend some time doing stuff that the players find really energising and fun and comes to them easily. If we're always over on the stretch and the challenge side, people could burn out. We all would burn out. If that's what our working life was like all the time and you're always on well outside of your comfort zone, then stuff's really tough. So as a coach, I think it's about recognising what the person in front of you needs and being really flexible to be able to create an environment where you can be a bit more supportive, where you can, you're not necessarily being autocratic, you're being really diplomatic, you're asking great questions rather than telling them things. I think just being mindful of it, mindful of this as a coach, is a really important tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, and I think it, you know, linking this back to the UEFA A license and something that we talk a lot about within our roles is self-awareness, isn't it? And I think what you've just spoken about is coaches taking time to be aware of themselves and, like you say, their biases, the way that they maybe coach and play and spend their time with their players. That, as you say, sometimes dialing down the tech and tack challenge is as much as important as actually sharing information with them, because sometimes, you know, players do need a break from that and they need to just consolidate what's happened and not be trying to be overloaded with more information to take it even further. And again, that's the skill of the coach to understand their players and the environment they're in. And that may be linked to the result. It might be the connections between players, relationships at that time. So it's quite a complex model, isn't it? It's not simple.
No, it's not simple at all, and ultimately, Mark, we're dealing with people. Mm. And everybody is completely unique, and that's brilliant. But also as a coach, it's really challenging as well, especially if you've got a group of 14, 10 year olds in front of you and they're all a bit different and you're trying to get the best out of everyone. It's not an easy job. I put myself off coaching now saying that out loud. I think maybe sometimes it's striking the right balance and doing things that's right for the person in front of you at that moment in time. So again, just referring back to that picture of the brain we were talking about, one of the points in there is it just says the female brain is better at handling the complexities of reading and writing. And it made me think about the way I might design an activity or a task or an interaction with a group. For example, it could be the case that you want your team to play with a really clear focus in this next part of the practice. So it could be about attacking play down the wings, let's just say that, and you've got some priorities as a coach. And I guess traditionally as a coach, we might explain things, we might show people on a whiteboard, and then we let players have a go. But I've started playing around with the idea of, right, let's draw the shape out on a piece of paper and write a couple of challenges for the players. And when I've been working with kind of female groups recently, I've given them a piece of paper and said, right, have a couple of minutes, read this, have a chat with your team. You decide what's going to be the best strategy for you for the next 5 minutes to make this come to life. Because I thought, well, I could explain it and I could probably lead them towards some of the answers I'm looking for. But because they're learners and they're invested in this process, and it's a relationship between the young people and me and the environment, they could have some better ideas than me. They've got some ownership about this, and if they can see it in front of them and there's something tangible they can hold on to and read and talk about and collaborate about, then there could be some magic in this.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's an interesting debate that comes up, and I probably sway more to one side than the other about sharing session plans and session objectives with players, boys or girls. But, you know, in this circumstance, I think there is a massive advantage in young girls understanding the practice before it starts, and even, you know, there's been times where we've shared stuff the day before, so they've really had an opportunity. Look, this is what we're going to work on tomorrow night. These are the session objectives. These are the practices that we're thinking of doing. However, have a think about what it means for you as an individual before you actually arrive to training, so that they're already in that learning mode. They're already potentially thinking about what that looks like or what it might look like. And, you know, those studious ones might go online and look at videos that might link to that, or they might come back with questions. And I think it'd be really interesting, and again, this, you know, going down the study route, it'd be really interesting to see the impact of sharing more information with players before we even get to training, and what impact that has on their learning and development.
There's a coaching friend of mine who I'm sure you know very well as well, Mark, Sally Needham, who I know is incredibly passionate about this. And she talks a lot about, and I'm going to use a word here that's a complicated word that I don't fully understand, polyvagal theory, she talks about, which in more simple terms is about part of your brain that regulates emotions and social connections. And when I was talking to Sally before, she used the phrase sensing in, which I really liked as a turn of phrase. And she was talking about all of the psychological benefits of connecting with your group before the practice. So it could be you want to share some of the outcomes that you're going to do the next night. You might send a session plan. You might record a selfie video as the coach and send it out on your WhatsApp group. You just might find some innovative and creative ways of forming a connection. So when your players arrive at your practice, they know what tonight's about. They've had some time to think about it. They get there, and if they might have a question, so they can ask it straight away based on the information you'd shared the night before, or they might just be ready, raring to go. And I think just even from on one side of the scale, making people feel really comfortable. On the other side of the scale, preparing people to come before. There's a huge amount of value in it.
Yeah, and it always worries me when you ask players after a session sometimes, and again, you know, no one specific, but there's times where you've asked players, what was the session about today? And they go, I don't know, I just played. And again, that's the complete opposite end of it, isn't it? Is that, you know, if players don't really know what they're working towards, then how can they improve, or how can they understand how it links into the game? So I think there's massive value in sharing information. And again, as any individual coach, the challenge is knowing your individuals and your group and how much is the right amount to share, and taking in board the information that they are young people and they have things beyond football. And therefore, you know, when is the right time to share with them to get the best out of them?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe there's a balance in that between, I think it depends on your setting and if you're working in development football or performance football. There's a balance between leaving some intentional grey area so players can go and make some decisions for themselves and discover stuff. Or if that feels for some individuals like ambiguity. So I don't quite know what to do because there's too many decisions. I just want to be told. And let's face it, we've all worked with players who just want to be told what to go and do, because actually it makes their role within the game crystal clear. And maybe this just comes back to, as a coach, as someone who's helping people fulfill their potential, giving them a range of ways to learn and develop within your practice is really important. But on the flip side of that, knowing each person in your practice is an individual, that you might just have to dial up or dial down some of these challenges that you set to make the task not too much of a stretch for every person in the group, because different things will stretch different people at different times.
Yeah, definitely. We're coming nearer to the end of sort of this chat. How I'd like to finish is just again, you know, thinking about everything we talked about today, what would you say then if you were going to give three pieces of advice to coaches that want to challenge their players from a psychological perspective, what would it be? What would be the three things that you'd encourage them to try and do?
Three things. I would ask more questions out of genuine curiosity. Because I think sometimes as coaches, we ask a question with an answer in mind. Mm. Sometimes just asking because you're genuinely curious about what the player is thinking and then responding in a really positive way to that is really important. Being really flexible with your practice, I think would be one. So we spoke about this earlier, but designing a practice around what's going to create great learning rather than just trying to hammer in lots and lots of football. Would be really valuable. So actually in my practice this week, because we've had a heavy week last week and we lost at the weekend, I want to dial up some activities which are more fun and engaging and dial down some of the really kind of technically hard stuff, because the players need to feel really supported and safe this week. And then I think that the third thing would be around thinking about your behaviours as a coach. We want the people in our practice to feel safe, secure, to play without a fear of failure. So do your behaviours create an environment where that can come to life? Are you supportive and unconditional? Do you focus on the intention over the outcome? And I think if we can be consistent with that, we can create an environment where we can build upon a lot more than the stuff with our feet.
Yeah, no, I love that last point. I think that that coaching behaviours is something that we all have to be aware of. And sometimes I think in the moment we can, as coaches, move away from some of our behaviours that really do motivate players and encourage them and allow them to play and think for themselves. And yeah, there'll be a time where we have to go the opposite way, but actually we need to stretch and challenge our players by allowing them to explore their own emotions and thought process rather than just imparting information on them. And I think that's a great point to finish. One last question, Tom. As you said, you're still learning about this subject and probably reading stuff or listening to stuff. Is there anything that sort of advice or any books or podcasts or anything that you'd suggest that that supports this?
Like I said at the start, Mark, and you just said there, I'm learning, and I think the more I come to know, the more I realise I don't know. I was talking to someone yesterday, and they were looking at the balance between are you coaching football, and maybe it's just a bit of both. So there's a book that I love that it's right next to me actually, that I keep dipping into. That really helps me think about asking the right question at the right time. So it's called Coaching Athletes to Be Their Best, by a guy called Steve Rolnick. Incredibly interesting, and for me it's about asking questions with the best intentions. A nice analogy that Steve uses in the book is about asking a great question could be like knocking on someone's front door. If you get the question right, they might let you in. But you wouldn't go into someone's house and just try and rearrange all their furniture because they'd kick you out really quickly. So it's about making really good observations about the things people say back to you, and then giving them permission to explain more and elaborate further. And for me, that's just been revolutionary in the way I've thought about having really good discussions, really honest discussions with the people that I'm working with. Because there's a nice phrase that I've heard around seeking to understand before wanting to be understood. And actually, why would I be able to help someone unless I really kind of take a real captive interest in what's important to them? So yeah, that book's been something over the last 6 months or so that's really been really helpful for me.
Yeah, we could probably now spend another whole hour talking about active listening and how to really, really talk about discussions and working with people. But maybe we'll save that for another time. Just to plug some of the work that you do, Tom, obviously you work for UK Coaching. The website has a huge amount of resource in there as well. So whilst you're supporting us and the FA in trying to enhance coaching within the women's and girls game, obviously, you've got a wider reach, and you've got some fantastic podcasts on there and resources for people to look at if they so wish.
There's lots there. And I guess the beauty of UK Coaching is we work with all sports, and we work with coaches who are grassroots through to coaches who are working with performers who are on Olympic pathways. So no matter where you're at in your coaching journey, you could probably find a podcast, a video, an article, something that aligns with something you're interested in or something you want to develop in. So there's loads on the website, so I'd encourage people to go and have a look.
Right, and the website is just UK Coaching?
UKcoaching.org.
Brilliant. Tom, thanks very much again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you about coaching and everything around coaching. And I'm sure people that listen to this will be really interested in the conversation. So thanks again.
No problem. Thanks, Mark. Been a pleasure.